Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on the companies we mention. Please do your own research.
Well, welcome to today's Monday Upbeat Markets. Today is the 15th of June. Actually, I'm recording it on the 14th of June because I'm in Hawaii and it's still Sunday night. But anyway, for you guys, it's Monday. What's been happening, Charles? Do we have a peace deal? Do we have an American-Iranian peace deal that's possibly going to be signed on Friday?
We do have an American-Iranian peace deal that's possibly going to be signed on Friday. I'm not entirely sure we've got an Israeli-Lebanon peace deal or an Israeli-Iranian peace deal.
We definitely haven't got one of those.
No, but ultimately, you know, the strait being closed is economically disastrous to everybody across the entire world. So you know, this situation was only ever going to be temporary. The question is whether this particular version of a peace deal holds. I'm in two minds about it. I think the first is, you know, ultimately, I think a peace is going to get signed, and you now have a framework that both parties are prepared to work on. So yeah. if it falls through in the next few days, and being realistic, I mean, there's a good chance that happens. Good chance it doesn't as well. But if it does fall through, then you're not going back to the drawing board. You're going back to that framework, and there'll be specific sticking points that you can work on. Do you know?
Yeah. So I think we're coming towards a negotiated settlement. The US know that they can't put boots on the ground. They know that they can't win. And the Iranians know that they can't win as well. And they're also getting strangled economically as well by the Americans. So it's like, it's okay, guys, we need to settle this. The reality of the situation is I see that we're going to go down the line. The Iranians are going to get a big economic boost because lots of sanctions will stop from all over the world. They'll be able to sell their oil. They'll be able to bring it out wherever they want to sell it. They'll be able to sell it. And that's going to help Iran an awful lot. We're going to have peace in that area. But the loose cannon is Israel.
Dude. I think the other thing is, you know, the strait is reopened. There's green candles everywhere. Everyone's very, very excited. But ultimately, having closed the strait, there's the threat of it closing again in the future for whatever reason, right? And so, you know, that could be after this, you know, ceasefire is over. That could be 3 years from now. It could be 10 years from now. But ultimately, the world is going to have to look globally and say, right, we need to diversify our supply chains, which they're already doing. So a lot of companies that, you know, saw a massive boost because the strait was closed, because of supply chain concerns, they'll obviously be falling a fair bit now. But ultimately, their investment case hasn't changed because the fear of the strait being closed again is going to be there forever now. I would imagine it'll still be incredibly important in terms of oil, gas, and all the other materials that come through. But I imagine it'll become less important over time.
It's protecting that supply chain, isn't it, ultimately? Yeah. The world has now realized that we are not as beautifully happy and international as we all thought we were. And, you know, you need to secure your supply chains in whatever that is, and especially the superpowers. You know, you're talking about the US has been affected, even though it's used its resources and it's used its sort of stockpiles. You've got China that's been affected. You've got India that's very adversely been affected. Japan's been affected. All of these countries now are going, hey, I need another way to get this stuff.
Well, even on the small cap level, right? So I spoke to Tom Reynolds at Prospects Energy, and their Spanish assets, Tesorillo, for example, has always had problems on the government level because ultimately, you know, the government didn't want development of hydrocarbons. That tune appears to be changing. You know, if you look at Italy and the uranium assets we discussed with Ippo, those uranium assets, you know, previously the Italians didn't want anything to do with uranium. Now they want security of energy supply. If you look at the North Sea and you know, Al Khan's, you know, recently resigned from from, you know, his position in the Labour government, he's talking about energy security being incredibly important. And it's the same story across France. It's the same story, you know, in Germany, where they shut down all the nuclear power and they're realizing perhaps not the best idea. You have a situation where you relied on a combination of Russian gas and, you know, Qatari liquefied natural gas. And it, from when Russia, you know, properly invaded Ukraine in 2022, up until now, where the strait is closed, the folly of relying on foreign actors that don't have European best interests at heart for energy supply is being laid to bear. And another company, you know, that I think, you know, we discuss in the podcast, Energy Pathways, just energy storage in general, you know, energy production. Again, why does this company get a Section 35? 5 years ago, it wouldn't have. But the world has changed. And the ability, you know, backing energy companies at European base was basically economic suicide a few years ago. Now it's a core portfolio strategy.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, do you think George Washington would ever have imagined that there would be a 250th celebration UFC fight on the White House lawn?
The worst part of it is, did Trump delay the peace deal so that he could announce it? I want to say,
well, he was sitting there with his hat USA. I watched it because I'm in Hawaii and some of the guys had it on the big screen. So we were watching it all there about 6 o'clock UK or Hawaii time. Some great fights. Justin Gaethje absolutely blew Ilya Topuria's face apart. I've never seen anything like it. His face was destroyed. And Alex Pereira, the Brazilian guy, got whooped as well. So, yeah, it was entertaining, but at the same time, I don't know. Should a fighter walk through the Oval Office on his way to the ring?
It's got very, very kind of actually straits around it in terms of like effect promoting. I know it's just basically a sport, but promoting a form of violence through politics. It feels very kind of gladiatorial. Almost.
Yeah, no, it is. It is.
And I just, you couldn't imagine, for example, Obama, you know, building a basketball court and getting the NBA finals to happen in the White House. So, yeah. But ultimately, but then on the flip side of it is, you know, was it entertaining? Was it a success for America? You know, yes and yes. So,
it a big publicity campaign? Yes.
Okay,
anyway, let's move on. In the same country, we've got the World Cup going on. Not going to talk about it too much. There has been a few upsets, nobody's really lost, but a few teams have drawn where they would have expected to win. We're still waiting for England to play on Wednesday. All interesting stuff. Anyway, let's move on to our section today, which is going to be a new section that's going to be in every week now, where we're going to be doing some charting and fundamentals. So roll that tape. Okay, so welcome to a new section, which is going to be a regular on Mum's podcast, Monday Upbeat Markets. We welcome Justin Pitchford. How are you, Justin?
I'm very well. How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Good. Thank you very much for having me on.
Yeah, we're on different continents and different time zones, but here we are. So what we're going to do every week, just to explain to people, we're going to pick between 4 and 6 companies that we're going to do an overview of the chart. And then either me, Charles, or Graham are then going to give a bit of background, fundamentals, why we think the chart's telling the right message or not, as the case may be. So hopefully you're going to look forward to that. And over to you, Justin, for our first pick.
Yeah, okay. Well, if I just share my screen, and hopefully everybody can see that. So first one I thought we'd start today with is Forge. So this one here is one that I've actually covered off in my chart show, which I do every week. We covered this off today, and we thought this was the bottom around. I think it was about 0.013 pence at the time. And that's because of the structure of this sort of downward trend here. And I won't go into what the structure is, but from here, in charting terms, that is a really good classic move down. It's very good. And what we had here, we had a rising RSI with a new lower low, which is really bullish. And as a result of that, we thought that we were going to see a push up to the upside. And in fact, this is still my blue arrow from what I was kind of expecting to happen. And as you can see from there, my first point of call was to fill the gap, because markets, no matter where they are in the world, you know, whatever exchange listed on, markets always love to go and fill a gap. So, and you're always going to get your sellers. So you're always going to get traders who in for a gap fill trade. And so we've filled that gap, which is great. So we've got that over and done with. But to me, because of this, the structure down there, I think we're going to get at least three wave bounce to the upside. So we've had that wave one. And sorry about that. So I'm expecting, we've had the corrective phase. So we're having this sort of corrective phase here. But I think at some point in the future, and I can't give you a time on that, but where I think that's heading, well, my first point of call here would be this 0.0270 up to 0.03 and possibly up to 0.034. Now, obviously, it could go higher than that, depending on the news. But even without news, that's kind of where I'd expect it to go, just on the basis of how that, you know, the downward trend that it's had since it came onto the market. So that's how I see that one playing out in the sort of short term.
Very good. What's your thoughts, Charles? You've written an article about these guys, Forgent. Obviously, big change of plans from the EQTech. And now basically an explorer in Australia. Yeah, so go for it. What do you think, Charles?
Sure, it's interesting to listen to the technical analysis, because technical analysis isn't how I conduct my picks. So it's nice to watch somebody else come to similar conclusions, but from a different angle. I mean, my pitch, you know, for it was fairly recently that, you know, before the new cash came in, it was valued at under £1 million. A shell's worth £1 million. So whatever you're doing at that point, if you're investing at that point, your risk profile was extraordinarily low. Obviously, the cash comes in. And then we have GreenRoc, which is his near-term catalyst. So if you assume, you know, maiden drilling is targeted for August. And basically, even though the summer is generally very quiet, I tend to find that, you know, lower liquidity, you know, lower market capitalization stocks can have bigger jumps over the summer compared to others, simply because there's a handful of small trades can push it back up. And if you've got sort of a little bit of FOMO going into those assays coming back at the same time, then yeah, I think we could see Justin's target hit basically on that one. So I'm in agreement.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing was the news as well of the JORC asset that they've now got themselves an option on as well, which is, I think, a bit of game changer, you know? I mean, ultimately, it backs them up with an asset that actually has a physical resource already on it, a JORC. So, yeah, I can see what you're talking about here, Justin, and more, to be honest, I think.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, obviously everything goes in waves, so that isn't the end of the move. So, you know, that's where I'd expect it to go. And then you see a bit of turbulence. You're always going to get buyers and sellers. So, you know, that's not to say that it's the end of the move. But, you know, some people just want to see it go, you know, straight up and, you know, go to 1p or something like that, which, you know, that can happen, obviously, that, you know, you do see moves like that. But anything like that is going to see an immediate sell-off. And, you know, so what you really want to see is a nice, steady move up. So, you know, a nice, you know, sort of, you know, few pips up and then a couple of pips back down. And if you keep on making that, you're going to make a nice, steady gain over a period of time. And, you know, what I like about Forge is the fact that this is one that I hold. I think I disclosed that over on X. It's a tiny market cap. They can go anywhere. So, you know, if they come out with some stellar drill results, it quite literally, you know, that could have a massive spike in it. And, you know, it's obviously going to add to the value of the company. But they've also been recently capitalized. So, you know, they've got money in the bank, as far as I know. So, you know, that's a really positive thing. So it's looking really strong. And as I say, they had a recent announcement of an additional asset, I think, was it during the week, last week. So, you know, there's an awful lot of things going on. There's a lot of news flow. And what Charles said there about the summer months, I actually think we're going to see a really good summer period for small cap market. So, you know, which doesn't always happen, but you know, last year we had a good summer, and I think we're in for the same again. And I think we're going to have a really good run up until Christmas. So, you know, I talked about that in another podcast, but yeah, I think we've got the sort of stars are aligning for small cap over the next few months.
Yeah, very good. James at Forgent, we will be talking to him on the next news, I think. So, yeah, let's see where that ends up. So what's the next one we're in for?
Next one I'm going to talk about is MPAL, which is MedPAL AI PLC. This one is another one that I highlighted on our podcast. I think at around 2.5p. I said that another one, which is IPO'd, I think it was around 6p IPO'd, and then it sort of shot up to 12p and then sold off. But another absolutely cracking, set of trading data for me to go from there. I was basically calling that at 2.5p. The company is medical related. It's a pharmacy. It's also got, it's just had announced last week that the diet pill for the UK is going to be launched or authorised. And I think over in the United States, that was sort of launched 5 months ago, and they've seen absolutely incredible numbers of people taking this diet pill up. I think it's 3 million people have taken it up over there. I believe in the UK, there's something like 1.6 million people who inject diet drug that is now in oral format, with I think 3 million or 3.2 million considering taking it. So that's just in the UK. So the market potential there is absolutely massive. The CEO's ambition is to be a top three provider of these oral pills the diet pharmacy market. In addition to that, they've got pharmacy things, and also they've got a wearable aspect to it as well. So there's a lot going on, but from a charting point of view, I did say it at around 2.5p. That was a really good buy. Where do you think it's going short term? Well, you know, we had an absolutely cracking candle there on Friday. There's plenty of news due out of the company. And I think that as long as they can keep going here, I think, you know, probably the next point of call is around 6p. I think you're going to see a bit of turbulence around there because, you know, bit of resistance, but my sort of longer term target here would be this red box target, 8.64, 10.44 and 12.74, which would then be all time highs. And then, you know, it's got blue skies from there. So, you know, it could go anywhere, but, you know, we'll wait and see what happens as and when it gets there, or if it gets there indeed. I'm not guaranteeing anything, but it looks pretty good at the moment.
Yeah. I mean, for my part, I think it either gets there or it doesn't go anywhere. I know that sounds like a kind of a little bit of a cop out, but it's one of those stocks where they now have all the catalysts lined up. It looks like it's right in the right place, and it should just re-rate to that level. It should go that much higher, and basically something has to go wrong for it not to. And basically, do you know? Sorry, yeah. I mean, what do you think, Justin? I mean, because ultimately, yeah, go on.
Yeah. I really like it. I liked it originally because of the wearable aspect to it. And basically what the company's doing, they've got so you can use a Fitbit or, an Apple or a Google Watch, whatever it is that you use. And basically what it'll do, it'll monitor you and send that data back to the pharmacy or to the GP clinician, whatever it is. And if they see that your health is altering, is they'll then trigger contact with you. And, you know, they've actually got trials of this going out. I think it's with some gyms across the UK. And, you know, that's potentially a really big market. But what I thought is for the sort of over 70s, I think that that would be, you know, they'll take that up in their droves, because, you know, first off, they do a pharmacy where it literally you get a prescription and they'll process the prescription and post it to your door, which is ideal for those who aren't mobile, or, you know, they find it difficult to get out of the houses. You know, that's exactly what they want. You know, even from my perspective, I've got my daughter, she has a prescription for her asthma. And, you know, I find it really difficult to get to the pharmacy. So, you know, and I've never considered using an online prescription service, but, you know, it makes sense to do that from my perspective. So, but with the elderly, for example, being having a wearable that's tracking them, I think it'd be like the Wii machine was, you know, where everybody's just going to take it up.
Yeah, I think the bigger picture to look at, from my point of view, is the insurance market, right? If you have a wearable that can track you, that can make sure you're getting the medicines that you need, that can potentially spot early signs of disease. Do you know what's that worth? You know, on an individual patient basis, probably not much, but across a population.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's the market cap of this, guys?
20 million roughly at the moment.
20 million at 4p.
Yes. It's around 20 million. But I see it, you know, because it is, you know, you get a lot of, historically, you've had companies like CTAG or Fitbug, I think it was, that we had many years ago, you know, and just based on speculation of what they're going to do, they sort of went to silly market caps. But this one here is, you know, this is business end of things. This isn't gone through the speculation phase. This is business end. So, you know, quite literally, they've gone from zero to, I think, 52,000 prescriptions being processed every month. You know, that, I think that's since November. So the pharmacy side of things is really snowballing. I think they need to get to 80,000 prescriptions per month in order to get to break even. So they're almost there. And then you've got this, you know, the weight or the diet pills, and they've got some other bits and pieces as well, you know, that they've got, which, you know, this is a booming industry. So if they can get, you know, a 5% or a 2% market share, they're going to be making, you know, many, many millions every month.
Do you know what they're making per prescription? I mean, are they benefiting in the US, or it's just going to be the UK?
As far as I know, the launch is just the UK, but their profit margin is around, I think it's about 32%. So it's a healthy profit margin. But the cost of these diet pills is around, I think, £120 to £200 per month. So it's a lot of money. You know, if you get 10,000 paying, that's a lot of money coming in and a regular revenue. You know, and it is the kind of, you know, a prescription that you're going to get, and you're not going to move around. You're going to get your one prescription, and you're going to stick with that for at least 12 months, one would suspect. So, you know, the revenues here really could snowball and extremely fast. And I know that there's a few broker targets out there, ranging from anything from 21 pence up to 111 pence, I think, or probably 120 pence. Can't remember off the top of my head. So, you know, that's on, you know, right or wrong, but I think it's a really exciting one from the basically because of the prescription side of things. And then they've also got this AI robotics that actually processes the prescriptions and posts them out.
Well, it's like an Amazon, Ocado, Netflix when it posts out DVDs, kind of hybrid, yeah, for pharmacy, right? So you're building this, what is effectively a vertically integrated medicine fulfillment model. You've got the, you know, that they've got the Runcorn hub, right? It's about 20,000 square feet. And as you say, automated robotic dispensing. So you're looking at, you know, fulfillment costs. I think they said back in the day, you know, and it's probably better now, under £2 per order. And then the other thing is, which I don't think you've mentioned, is that regulatory moat. So, you know, they've got a distance selling pharmacy license, which I believe you can't acquire anymore. So
actually, it's true. Yeah.
So you know, someone coming in to kind of steal their thunder aren't able to, because, you know, the license that they have, they can't get, you know, nobody new can get hold of them. So there's a lot of moat in there too.
So based on the chart and the fundamentals, that's a dead cert then, basically, guys.
Well, nothing that's a dead cert.
Okay, let's move on to the next one.
Okay. Next one I'm going to do is Alert or Defence Holdings PLC. And you know, this one here, I called this last year that little blue box just there. That's where I originally took my entrance. And as you can see, last year it had absolutely an amazing run from sort of 0.33 pence, I think it was, where I was buying. And it ran all the way up to nearly 5p. And that was sort of back in October last year. Since then, it's fallen back. But, you know, that was sort of, as I like to say, the hype phase. So, this is the potential. So this is what they were doing. Obviously, the retail got really behind it because the store is fantastic. So I know Charles has interviewed the companies on several occasions. So Charles knows it much better than I. But from a charting perspective, this is really good because if I just get my arrow, this here is a wave one. So it's only had one wave to the upside. And anybody who follows me knows that I work in waves and the markets work in waves. So you've got to have three waves. So that's your one, that's your two, that's your big long corrective phase. And it's looking like we're starting the next wave up. So if I just get rid of that, where do I think that's going to head short term? Well, this was my reversal zone down here at 1.2 down to 0.5 pence, basically, isn't it? But obviously, it's pretty strong. And it's now broken out the top of that blue box. So that's looking really good. And I'm expecting trading here to continue north. And my first point of call would be 2.155 up to 2.5 pence, basically, and possibly 3 pence from where we are at the moment. That's where I think that's going to be heading. Now, if the company can continue to throw out good news, I think that my next point of call, as I said, if I just draw that back up. So your wave one, that's your wave two. And, you know, this is going to be your wave three. And so this conservatively would be 5.66 up to 7 pence, basically, and potentially higher. But obviously, in order to do that, we need to sort of break and hold above 4.25 pence to activate that red box. And then things are going to get really exciting. But one chart, absolutely fantastic.
So, Justin, from a wave theory point of view, we have normally a wave one, which takes us up, a wave two, which is corrections. Wave three is normally longer and stronger than any of the waves up. And then we have a wave four, which is correction again. And then wave five, which is sort of blow off top situation. But then there are waves within groups of waves, I presume, is what also you think about.
That is the Elliott wave theory. But Elliott wave theory doesn't work 100% for small cap stocks. So I've sort of adapted it to suit how the trading style works within the small cap environment. As you rightly say, you do generally get five waves, but not all the time, not particularly at the moment. But it's a bit more complicated than that. But from my perspective here, if it blew off and went much higher, then we could start to consider five waves and the implications of that. But we'll get to that. We'll break that prior high and then reassess the situation. That's the best thing to do. It could go an awful lot higher than what my sort of conservative estimate is there.
So, Charles, give us your fundamentals on Alert.
Yeah, I mean, we could be here a while, so, you know, I'll do it condensed. But ultimately, we basically had a direct contract from the MOD, which confirms that Defence Holdings has the ability to create technology or service a technology need that no other company can, right? Now, obviously, it was effectively a token amount for the first 3 months, after which we will see whether it converts into a larger contract. But this is one product that can be sold to multiple partners, and we have multiple products in the offing. We also have an accelerator program in partnership with Oracle, with, you know, the CEO Andrew Rohan is looking at bringing on board 10 companies, 10 startups to work through this accelerator program. And again, you know, the Oracle Defense ecosystem, you have to be invited into it. You can't just, you know, apply and cross your fingers. We've got Andy McCartney, obviously, of Microsoft Royalty, and then Andrew, the new CEO, who from Plexel, with, you know, both deep, deep government connections. And we have this situation where if you look at Al Khan's resignation, if you look at the defense minister's resignation over the past few days, they're resigning about money, not getting enough money for the department in the government, which is fair enough, because defense of the realm is, in my mind anyway, the number one most important thing for a government to do. But it's also about artificial intelligence and the lack of sovereign AI. And we saw Claude as an Anthropic. The US government has decided that, you know, non-US citizens are not allowed to access what is basically the most advanced AI model in the world anymore. We need sovereign artificial intelligence that we can rely on only by ourselves. And so this theme of sovereign AI and defense, there's only one company working at the intersection that's publicly listed, which is a pure play, and that's Defense Holdings. So the cash is going to rush into the sector, and it's going to start now, because every fund, every family office in the country is looking at this theme over the weekend and looking for ways to play it. There's only one way, and that's why I'd agree at the height. Yeah.
I like your use of we. I feel that you own this stock and you want to be part this company, and that's what we like.
The way I see it, right, like I backed Palantir at the very, very early days. It was sort of $5-6 a share, and I don't want Palantir in the NHS. I don't want Palantir having any part of the UK systems, but ultimately they're the only company that's capable of doing it. If a consortium of smaller companies in the UK can replace Palantir, then people would vote for that and people would want to fund them. And the only thing that's stopping that from happening is government support. So we will see.
Good old government, hey?
Indeed, the cheese.
Okay, let's move on to the next one, Acuity Risk Management.
Yeah, ACRM. I'll just say defense, you know, the defense stocks, I mean, they're massively valued. So, you know, they're like 100 times revenue, I think. Yeah, I covered that off sort of last year. So if that gets, you know, plenty of contracts, which is probably likely, then that really could go anywhere. So yeah, it really is an interesting stock. And as I say, you know, that blue box reversal zone down there, that is really good. So I think it's one to definitely watch. There you go. ACRM is the next one. So just get that one up. And this one here is... you know, it's one that's been in a long-term decline, but it's in a blue box reversal zone. So, you know, generally speaking, you know, from this blue box, it is from a long-term sort of corrective move down here. So it's from 2.5 down to 0.5 pence, basically, isn't it? But, you know, where do I think that's heading? Well, you know, the first point of call here is, you know, we've got that gap play at 1.44. So that is, you know, quite a lot of return from what we've got at the moment. But, you know, what I would like to see here is, you know, if we can fill that gap, you know, just sort of something like that, probably go up there, a bit more of a corrective move, you know, and if the company can drop some really good news, then, you know, really it needs to be attacking the top of that blue box there, so which is 2.5 pence, which actually coincides with my red box there as well at 1.88 up to 2.22 and possibly 2.66. So, you know, from my perspective, what I want to see here is fill that gap, get that, you know, get the gap traders done and dealt with, and then once we've done that, we can start then head up and we can go up to this 2.5 pence here, and then, you know, once we've done that, you're going to see a bit of resistance there, but, you know, if we can settle at the top of that box, you know, get some more bulls on board, then we can hopefully go again. And my long-term target on that would be an astonishing 8.65 up to 10.8 pence, and probably even higher, 13.6 would be the top of the box. But, you know, first things first, let's get to that 2.5 pence is what I say. Or fill the gap first, then the 2.5 pence.
Yeah, I see this one, major overspend, and that's really why it came down to where it was. Then we had David, and I'm not even going to try and pronounce his surname, come in and start the turnaround, which was basically to cut costs and to start a revamp of the new products that they were going to be offering. You know, I think it's got a very solid base based on its market cap now as well. You know, it's a very small market cap now. It's got a solid base from revenue that's coming in that is going to keep on keeping on, if you like, because their retention is very high. If they get this new product going, then I think your target is very reasonable. It sounds like crazy at the minute, but I actually think it's very reasonable. What do you think, Joe?
Yeah, I don't want to talk too much about, you know, the business that already exists, but, you know, to put it this way, right? If you look at the trading update from the 23rd of April, so it's a little bit out of date, but say admin expenses down about 40%, but Q1 revenues, $441,000, right? Recurring subscription revenue was around 90% of that. And you had, you know, multiple contract, new contracts. One, we had a contract increased in value and expanded to $100,000 a year very recently. So in terms of bread and butter, it's undervalued just on revenue. It's, you know, it's very simple, just the revenue alone undervalues it. But this AI native product, when I interviewed David recently, the hints I got because it's within the cybersecurity, obviously, intersection, whether it could be defense related, is kind of a problem a little bit. And I got the sense that perhaps it was, or at least it could apply to that sector. And you could see a pretty strong re-rating if that product acquires any kind of contract in that space. But we shall see.
Yeah, I think they have contracts with the Department of Defense already. It's a case of how big those contracts could become. And it comes back to the alert thing again as well. You know, do we need our own proprietary AI, both security and, you know, physically have it here in the UK for defense, for many, many, many other things? I mean, we've been discussing also about Narwhal and what they're doing, Charles, in terms of having its own large language model for stuff that can be done in the UK, for even just making appointments, call centres, all of those things. Do you want to bring in a foreign entity in that, or do you want to have a situation where that's ring-fenced in the UK and we know that it's secure?
Well, I think one of the key problems you have, for example, that I work with a couple of blue chip clients where they expect you to use Anthropic for almost everything, right? What happens if in, you know, a future combat scenario, for example, your access to that model is cut off and everything that you work on relies on it? You need sovereign AI. You just do. There's no argument against it. And it's going to be quite expensive to develop. But ultimately, there's no. But on the flip side, I mean, I'm sometimes quite negative on the UK in terms of politics and tax. But, you know, after the US and China, we've got by far the highest amount of spending on artificial intelligence anywhere in the world. We've got one of the best financial sectors in the world, one of the best legal sectors in the world. We've got all the rest, all the ingredients we need to be successful. We just need a little bit of a change of direction. But we shall see.
Yeah. And I'd say that it's right at the bottom of that sort of long-term reversal zone. So, you know, from an entry point of view or risk reward, you think that that's a pretty good entry where it is at the moment. So as long as the news is good out of the company, there's only, technically speaking, one way that's going to be heading. And, you know, we'd expect at least three ways to the upside. So, you know, to me, that's looks pretty good where it is.
Anything under a penny there, I think, is going to be bargain territory now.
Yeah, I agree, yeah. So, yeah. So, move on to the next one.
Next one is Ajax Resources.
Ajax.
Has been bashed recently.
do you know, this one actually, you know, this is just a great, another great stock that's, you know, it's sort of had an absolutely fantastic run. It went all the way from sort of 3p up to the dizzy heights of 12p. And then it's pulled back. But you're always going to get sellers. You know, people start to profit take. And, you know, what happens is that you can see that you sort of get big spikes down. And people, whilst they might say that they believe in the company, they think it's going to go to the moon, you know, things start to slide and they panic sell. So, you know, a great saying is that it's sellers chasing sellers. And I think that's really what you've seen here. But, you know, from my perspective, that's a pretty good, chart. And this is Aquis listed as well, which, I think that might have got hit by IG saying that they're going to pull out of the Aquis market. And then last week they said, don't sell anymore. You know, we're going to come back into the Aquis market. So, I think that this one here, I've got a blue box reversal zone there at 5.85 down to 4.9 pence, basically. And I think we're going to see at least a three-wave bounce to the upside. We might see, something like 1, 2, 3. But in all probability, we've only had sort of one wave to the upside. So, and if I just go there, so that's our wave one. This is our corrective move, and hopefully now this is going to be the start of that third wave to the upside. So, and all we need to do here is sort of close above 10.25 pence. Once we've done that, we're going to activate this red box here, which is going to be 14p up to 16.4 and possibly 19.5 pence. So, potentially there's a lot of reward in Ajax. It just needs to get whatever news it is out. It's not one I know too much about. I've sort of read a bit about it a while ago, but something I've not really looked into closely just recently. It's one I've got on my list to have a look at, actually.
Yeah, for me, Ajax, it kind of typifies that thing. I mean, you're saying sellers chasing sellers, and I agree with you, but I also think it's if you bought it at whatever price you bought it at and you liked it at that price or that valuation, looking at the fundamental level, not the technicals. If nothing has changed, then why sell? Ultimately, this is the way I always apply things, and things come back, And you don't know why it's come down. It might have been that a major holder needed some cash. It might have been, a little bit of panic. It might have been someone looked at the SpaceX IPO and thought, right, let's just trade that and we'll be back next week. But I think the big thing, other than the various catalysts they've got going on in the background, the Revale, the uranium spin-off of the Italian assets, that could be a little bit of a sentiment changer given how good those assets are. And that word Revale, it's a military word for banging a drum and getting people back into order, ironically, and it's also the French word for waking up. So hopefully between those two things it'll pop back up, and we're quite looking forward to the IPO when it comes to market. I would imagine, Kevin, in the next few weeks.
Yeah, it's scheduled for I think next week, so it should come, and that in my view is definitely one of the catalysts. I know for a fact one of the big holders has been selling, and hence the reason why we're down here. Happy to admit, because I put it on in the group, I bought 1.2 million shares in this stuff last week. There is a huge number of catalysts coming. You've got potential Eureka sale. You've got many, many different deals that I think will be done over the next few months. And I think within, let's say, 12 months, we're going to have clear sight of a revenue-producing asset, as in an asset that is then going to go on and be mined, I think. And that will be a complete game changer for this company. I agree with Charles that Revale, I mean, if that uranium play plays out the way I'm thinking, it could add more than the current market cap of Ajax to Ajax, even with 25% of the company.
Yeah, well, I think the thing is why I particularly like it, aside from the asset, is uranium is doing so well, and London is desperate for uranium plays. So I interviewed Stallion over in Canada, but they're not on Crest. It's basically very difficult to get hold of it in London unless you know what you're doing. But people are starved of uranium investment. Power metal is draining a little bit in the Athabasca as well, but there's only one component of the investment case. The only other one really that I take seriously is Arkor Resources out in Namibia. I think they're going to do very, very well. But ultimately, if you want to buy uranium exploration plays, what is there? And that's also a huge advantage. So we shall see.
Yeah, and this uranium exploration play also was basically shuttered because of the government didn't want to play the game and the locals didn't want to play the game in Italy in the 80s. Chernobyl and all those different things that happened you know, 2 weeks ago now, the Italian government have basically said, yes, we're okay with uranium production. So I think even on the basis that they just take this asset to the next level, which is probably a bit more drilling and a bit more, or not a bit more, they need the environmental stuff done, then it's going to be valued significantly higher than its £4-4.5 million market cap that it's going to come to the market. So I think that's one to keep an eye on, guys. Revali, as Charles explained.
Yeah, I also think that, you know, a change of direction from IG is going to be key as well, because, you know, any of those people who've sold out because of that, you know, because they've been told they're going to be sold out anyway, obviously they're now going to be buying back in. So and what a great place to be buying back in, you know, yeah, within the blue box reversal zone. What a cracking time to be buying. I think it's really brutal.
Yeah, I mean, you've got a market cap down here of just £6 million with in excess of £2 million in cash. And for instance, they sell Eureka for a couple of million pounds. You know, all of a sudden, basically, the market cap's covered by cash, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it could be very interesting. Right, let's move on to the last one. Energy Pathways. The £1 billion company in the making.
Yeah. Do you know, this one's a really good one. I mean, from my perspective, you know, you can look at my posting history, and you know, we called that, we said that we thought the low was going to be that 1.92, which was correct. We had a spike up there, and my target was always this 12.45 up to 15.3, which has now been hit. You know, so that's effectively, you know, just the market selling off as a result of hitting there. So it's just psychology of investors, basically. You know, so from my perspective, I'm not going to go into too technical here, but the market is telling us that this high here is not the final high. You know, there's a 90% probability that this is going to go higher again. So it's not been too kind to me, because the market isn't giving me an entry price. So I don't have a blue box reversal zone. However, I would have thought anything, you know, around this level, you know, I'd have thought that, you know, 6.7 up to 7-8 pence has got to be a reasonable entry for a buy and hold, you know. And, you know, where do I think that's heading next? Well, it needs to go and break and hold above sort of 12.5 pence, which it's broken and got to close above that. Then we're going to be activating this red box zone here at 18.25 up to 21.3 and possibly 25.2 pence. That's where I see that one going. And as I say, from in terms of probability, it's actually saying to me that there's another leg in this one. So, you know, that's what I think is going to happen with
EPP. Justin, this chart is talking to you. Is that what you're telling us?
Yes, I there's certain charts that I really like. And, you know, this one here is, you know, for me personally, when I'm trading, this is the kind of setup that I am looking for. You know, it's not one that is particularly popular with a lot of traders, so it's not a crowded trade as such. I know this stock is popular with investors, so that's really good. But, you know, from my perspective, do I think that's going to go higher? Yes, I do. But when, that's the question. So it can be one of those that you can sit and hold for 12 months, or, you know, it could be that next week it goes higher. And, you know, from a technical perspective as well, I'm kind of expecting it over the next week, 2 weeks, to sort of have a change of fortune. So, yeah, I do. I like EPP. I like the chart. And fingers crossed it can go and break that 12.5 pence, and then we're on for much bigger returns than, you know, otherwise.
I'm happy to say I've been out in the 8-9p region. I think it's cheap as chips for the long term. I just think this is a project that in the UK is essential for our energy security, and the revenues that Energy Pathways are going to be able to create from all the different things that they're going to be doing, whether it's gas storage, whether it's the gas itself that they will sell, whether it's, you know, I think they're going to produce ammonia, graphite, all of these different things in this circular situation, which is also good for the environment, or neutral at the very least for the environment. I mean, for me, we shouldn't use the word no-brainer, but in the next 1 to 3 years, this company is going to be worth a huge amount of money as far as I'm concerned. Mm. Charles, over to you.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think the key thing for me was and remains the gas storage and how they have a gas storage license. You know, and it was kind of funny because they got, you know, when they originally got rejected, you know, I mapped out that Section 35. We got the Section 35 approval, and then once you had that, the license was only a matter of time. And it's quite interesting watching the chart kind of bounce up and down, even though, you know, you can't guarantee things are a slam dunk, but the second Section 35 was issued, the chance of them not getting a license once you've, you know, declared it a product of national strategic significance, very, very low, right? So anyway, got the license. I would say the reason it's come down is about the fact that it's a long-term investment, and in the small cap world, long term is about 6 minutes, I think. Now, when you've got SpaceX, you know, sucking up $75 billion of liquidity in a placing, and then, you know, as we know, there's 20 plus companies raising capital at the moment, with, you know, a sign of a much, much healthier market, but all coming looking to like IPO, RTO. You're having, you know, people that, like myself, for example, who might be buying month to month a little bit, don't have the capital to fund those new companies and also add on to things like EPP. So the buying pressure has dipped a little bit while the selling is still there. Those companies are going to stop raising capital in the next 2 or 3 weeks because they'll be done. There's no more coming in the pipeline that I can see. And then on just on a technical level, there's then going to be free cash. And also the SpaceX casino profits are going to start to come in. And you're going to have a lot more liquidity than there has been. But I think I would say, you know, to holders out there, the reason for the fall isn't because of the investment case. It's just a very rare technical confluence that we haven't seen for a very long time. And I think that's just being applied to it.
Okay, so Justin, Charles, myself, if you had to choose one of these six for a short-term trade, what would you choose?
Well, I'll go with MPAL because that is one I do hold. But I also hold Forge. And that's probably it out of the six at the moment. But, I was thinking about this earlier today because there's so many stocks I actually want to buy, but there's only so many stocks I can actually hold. And, you know, it's one of those things where you think to yourself, well, which one's the better one? And it isn't probably a case of which one's the better one. It's got to be a case of, from my perspective, that I like to have a few small caps. I like a few mid caps and sort of bigger caps. So I've got to have a bit of a mix between those for the portfolio. And, you know, from my perspective at the moment, I hold MPAL and Forge. I think they're going to be short-term good trades. But that's not to say, you know, I think Alert is another good one. I'd like to buy that. And yeah, I wish I'd have bought that at 1.2 or 1.3 pence. I missed it. But, you know, on a pullback, you know, hopefully I'm going to join that ride as well. You know, an EPP, another one. So, yeah, it's just a matter of moving, running around, isn't it? You know, and so
now Justin, you're naming them all, so we can't have them.
Yes, that's very true. Yeah, I want them all. I would like them all. But
if you had to buy either Forge or MPAL, which one would it be?
This week, MPAL. Because I think that move is still strong, and I think I'll be surprised if it doesn't hit 6p this week.
Okay, Charles.
This week, or at least the next couple of weeks, it'll be defense.
Well, let's say in the next month. Let's not be.
It'll for me out of those six, it's defense because we know a second contract is coming, and we also if you just track what's going on Twitter at the moment. Very, very senior people, what they're talking about. I just feel like bigger things are coming down the track.
Yeah. I like what both of you are saying. My view is, and obviously I've already stated that I just made a big investment in it, but I think with Revali, the thing that's changing in IG and probably, you know, quite a bit of news coming from various different courses, I think Ajax has got a good chance of popping over the next month. But we will see. I see positives in all of those stocks. longer term, of those six, the percentage return in the next period of time, I actually see Acuity Risk Management as potentially, percentage-wise, from such a low base, being an extremely good play. And if we're only looking at percentage returns, because at the end of the day, that's what we get paid on, I really do think that Acuity's got a great chance of doubling, trebling, quadrupling over the next, let's say, 6 to 12 months.
I've got a question. Let's see, do the challenge, because we said a month. Here's a question for you. Without naming the stocks, are we going to be 6 for 6 a month from now? Will it all be up? You know, not in percentage terms. Will they all have risen within the next month? And I'm going to go with yes. I reckon it's doable.
Do you know, I'm going to go with yes, because as I've said just recently on a podcast, that the FTSE AIM All Share Index was due a bit of a pullback. So we've had that. And I think now we're going to see a really big run in small cap and mid cap shares. So I'm really positive. I think we're going to have a really good summer, really good September, October, November throughout all the stocks. And you know, as long as it's a good story, and the fundamentals are good, then you know, and the charts are the right place, I think you're going to be making money on all of them.
Yeah, I'm going to say no, because this is small caps and something. Always goes wrong.
That'll be one disaster.
And in six stocks, the chances of them all doing what we think they're going to do is, I think, less than 1%. But we will see. I mean, I hope you guys are right. And we have, you know, the summer of 26 and, you know, stocks go bananas. But overall, if you look, you know, my thesis over the last period of time has been, you know, own things that are real, like resource stocks, and also the situation that we're getting ourselves into as a world. We need energy for this AI situation, which means anything that's to do with energy, as far as I'm concerned, is going to do well. And then you have the whole US situation in terms of, you know, where are US interest rates going to go? For me, whether we say short term, longer term, they have no choice but to go down, no choice at all. And the printing machine is going to start. So if those two things happen, then we are going to be flooded with cash in the markets, because it's just going to be freely available and cheaper.
Yeah, do you know, I was looking at the bond markets, especially like the 10-year bonds for US and UK. The charts are very similar. And to me, they're topping. You know, so we're due a corrective phase on that. So that means cheaper interest rates overall. You know, if you look at mortgage rates follow bond rates. They don't follow the Bank of England rate. You know, they can reduce it or increase it. It doesn't really make any difference. It's the bond rate that counts. And for me, they are going to be coming down at some stage. You know, and I think with what's happening with Trump and Iran, I think that's coming to a conclusion, which is going to be great for inflation, because hopefully then the cost of gas is going to come down, the cost of oil is going to come down, and that's the cost of everything that should come down as a result of it. So, you know, if they sort that out, then I think we should be in for a really good run over the next period of time. So, yeah, I think things are looking positive.
It's funny, I don't think the opposite of you, in that I don't think the rates are going to go much higher because of the damage that it'll do. But I think they'll stay around here. They might come down a little bit, but I think we've just reached a new financial normal. I think sort of 4 or 5% interest rates, base rate, is historically, if you look, you know, not the past sort of 10, 15 years, but if you look at the past sort of 100, roughly 5% is about average, is about where it should be for sound money. And obviously the money isn't sound anymore because of the deficit and the debt. But I do wonder whether a lot of people talking about rates being higher than they should be, actually, rates are just exactly where they're meant to be and should probably stick. But I agree with you. They might be forced to reduce them, but I think not.
No, I think 4% is going to be, you know, that was always going to be, or was always meant to be, the sort of the bottom for where everybody wanted them to be. It was only during the financial crash of 2008, 2009 that they started to reduce them. So, you know, 4% to me is a sensible rate to have. It's good for savers. goodish for savers. And, you know, and a pay rate for a mortgage is going to be around 4 or 5%, something like that. So yeah, I think it's going to be good all around. So, you know, look, just looking at the housing market, for example, you know, where I live at the moment, literally everything is sold. There's very little for sale. So, you know, higher interest rates hasn't impacted the housing market where I am.
The irony, I'm in Exeter where first time buyer houses are down 20% in a year. And the higher rates, I mean, ultimately, the rates have gone higher as people literally don't have the money to buy the property at the prices people want. So you've got more houses on, anecdotally anyway, than ever before. And the sellers are refusing to drop their price because they can't really afford to in many cases. And the buyers can't be, you know, convinced to go buy because they literally don't have the salary and they can't afford the mortgage. So obviously property markets are local and differentiated. But I think, you know, if you're north of Birmingham, anywhere north of there, then you'll probably be fine because the prices were kind of low to begin with. But in the south, it's doing a lot of, I wouldn't even say damage, because I think the prices correcting down is probably a good thing in the long run, even if it hurts me personally. But
yeah.
But if you've got a situation in the US where effectively you've got more and more and more debt coming to be revalued, and that's going to increase the burden on interest rates, on the payment that the US have to pay. And you basically stitched the Russians by stealing their T-bonds. Therefore, the rest of the world is thinking, don't really want to hold too many T-bonds anymore. Then you've got a Fed that has to buy its own T-bonds. And therefore, what do they have to do? They have to print money to buy it. So I just don't see any way that the US escapes from this spiral that it has to basically buy its own debt and reduce its interest rates to get itself out of this hole. Can't see any other way.
Do you know what's really interesting to me is, you know, if you look at the bond chart, is that's one wave. That is one wave. So you're going to see a corrective phase now, and then in technical terms, there's going to be another one.
That's technical. I mean, I look in the real world. It's kind of funny. Obviously, we have different ways of looking at things, which is why, you know, I think this podcast will be quite interesting for people to watch. But, you know, we've had the Strait closed for a decent period of time now. Even with the reopening, the infrastructure damage has been massive. I come from a farming family. Fertilizer costs are so high that a lot of pharmacists aren't planting crops. And that's not just in the UK, that's just globally. Energy costs are so high. What happens when inflation kicks back with a vengeance? Can they really afford to cut rates into that? And I don't know. I'm not, obviously, what the charts say, you know, it's hard to know. It's hard to know because the alternative version of that is Russia and Ukraine are looking closer to peace than ever before. If that happens at the same time as the Strait of Hormuz gets sorted out, or roughly at the same time, then you'll see an economic boom we probably haven't seen ever before. So, yeah, hard to know.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting times. You know, that's what I think. But, I hopefully, from a short-term point of view, and when I say short-term, sort of like 6-12 months, I think we're in for a good time again on the markets.
I'm remortgaging in March next year, so I hope so. Right.
Yeah. Fingers crossed it come down, Charles.
Okay, guys, that's been a really I've really enjoyed listening to you, Justin, and Charles's comments in terms of the fundamentals. To have them both together, I think is great.
Okay, so we recorded it on Sunday night. I hope you all enjoyed it. We certainly enjoyed recording it. I thought it was great. Charles, what did you think?
I think the combination of fundamental and technical analysis is always fun, because they agree in some areas and they disagree in others. And it's quite enjoyable watching some, you know, because people working on technical analysis, they're basically working on two truths, or what they believe to be truths, which is the first is that the market is efficient and all-knowing and knows everything, which I think in AIM is often not true. And the second thing is they're looking at historical patterns, that when something is illiquid in small cap markets, one good RNS and it just blows the chart out of the water. On the flip side, you're working on law of averages. So, you know, if it's a strategy that works for you, and you know, it does seem to work with the strap, it can be quite fun to watch. And the other thing I would say is, if you're like me and a long-term investor looking to technical analysis for an entry point in something you want to hold for a number of years, it can be quite a valuable thing to do.
And we had this discussion with him afterwards, didn't we, that, you know, the really big gains, 10 times, 15 times, 20 times, 30 times a stock, you are not going to get them by technically going in and then saying, that's wave three, I'm out.
Yeah.
You're going to get a return, and maybe those returns are going to pile up, but that's basically it. But anyway, I really enjoyed it. But announcement this morning then for Forgent, great results. What did you think of those, Charles?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of where you are in the exploration story, they're about as good as you're going to get. Ultimately, I imagine the share price leapt a little bit and then probably hasn't moved that much. But what it does mean is that, you know, as I said, what we recorded yesterday, when the exploration campaign in terms of the drilling starts, then you're probably going to see a pretty decent rise because the anticipation of the saves will be pretty strong. And that's basically, for me, the big story there. Not, you know, today's news, but what it could mean for future drilling, which is already scheduled and paid for.
Yeah, it's up 12% today. But, and there's a big but, there is 2 billion traded. So 2 billion shares traded already as we speak. You know, that is getting on for 7 or 8% of the company. So there's a lot of churn has happened, obviously, from the original raise at 1.5p. So I think that's a very positive thing. The other one who had news on Monday was Hammack. They had results at their Akoko project in Ghana. It's gold, 3.42 grams per ton over 23 meters from 15 meters underground. Now, that is quite a drill hole.
Indeed, not too shabby, watching with interest.
Yeah. And then we had some action on Alert. It seemed to be popping as well, and obviously we discussed that on the charts thing, so that'll be good news for you. And go.
Indeed.
I think keep an eye out for some of the things that are happening. The Revali IPO is obviously coming shortly. I think that's going to help in terms of Ajax. There seems to be a seller in Ajax. I get the feeling they've cleared because there was some very low sells going on this morning in the fours, and now it's popped back up over five again. To buy now it was 5.35, I think, again. So I get the feeling that we're either out or we're very close to being out. And I think that's going to pop back up to the last raise, which was 8p. And, you know, it's going to be based on Revali and also different other news that's coming. But let's see how that all works out.
Well, I think
any final things, Charles?
Final things. I think I'm generally of a mind that summer is quite quiet. You know, like June, July, August, it's particularly in sort of last July and August, tends to be fairly quiet in the small market. But maybe it won't be that way this year. I mean, that's my only kind of takeaway, because it tends to be the case, you know, kind of selling may go away, and then small caps like to sell in sort of early July and come back in September. It's basically, but it doesn't seem to be that case. Doesn't seem to be the way at the moment. The amount of capital being raised down here, the number of companies trying to list on the market, we haven't seen it like this in years.
No, absolutely. And it's a very positive sign, I'm sure of it. Mm. But I mean, if you remember last summer, we had Bitcoin madness, if you remember.
Oh, yes, I do.
So we did not have a quiet summer last summer. It was mental. Mm. Now, could we have a resources summer? Because, you know, this all gets settled. The dollar settles down. Everybody starts realizing that interest rates are probably going to go down, not up. Gold's going to start improving. Silver's going to start improving. Copper. I don't know about you, but I can see, you know, copper hitting 15,000 and, you know, the $7 per pound.
Well,
in certainly before the year's out. I'll be surprised if it doesn't.
Well, I think very possibly, but I also think there's a really strong case to be made that we have an artificial intelligence summit. You know, if you look between Oxford and Cambridge, you know, take out the US and China, the UK's got the highest amount of AI spending in the world. We've got the financial sector, we've got the legal sector in London. We've got some, you know, startup companies or university spin-offs looking for capital. And the public markets finally is attractive again in a way it wasn't in the past. You've got the Anthropic and the OpenAI AI IPOs coming as well, very, very soon. I can't help but think companies...
Well, there's the question. Are they coming after the news that they basically said that they couldn't sell it to anyone else in the world?
Well, Anthropic, I mean, it depends. You know, OpenAI are obviously fine for the moment, but, you know, ultimately the question is does that destroy the investment case, or is it the best piece of marketing you've ever seen in your life? That we have a product that is so advanced and so good that the US government had to stop. But ultimately, what's actually happened is, you know, Trump has said that only US citizens can use it. You know, how it is, to my mind anyway, just there's no way to actually enforce that. So obviously they've basically taken it down for everybody. But
you can't verify that. You can't say, is your laptop an American citizen?
Well, the interesting thing was they originally, so Anthropic, you know, kind of appeased the US government. They refused to work with the Department of War to start with a few months ago. And then on this new product, Fable and Mythos, they put in guardrails for anybody that wasn't basically in the inner circle. And so the question is, you know, the reason why I'm so, you know, bullish on defense holdings and other AI products, you know, sovereign AI companies, is that we are now in a war for artificial intelligence, and whoever has the most advanced model is going to have a massive economic and military advantage over the rest of the world, whether you like it or not. Now, who do you rely on to have access to the best models? And the question for me is, right, it's kind of funny because Claude's Fable and Mythos, right, which has now basically been taken offline, were so good that they were game-changing. They just were. But what has Anthropic got cooking, you know, or access to that the general public hasn't seen yet? You know, and on a bigger level, what is being created by individual or teams of AI engineers that is completely private and nobody knows about yet, even like large companies?
Well, for me, what it tells me more than anything with these type of statements is that every nation state is going to need to have its own models in some way, shape, or form.
But then the question is, do you know who's going to develop the best ones? How are they going to get developed? It's very hard to develop any kind of model without international data to train it on. Do you know?
Yeah.
I foresee what it's going to become devilishly complex. And the other thing is, you know, like I'm mid 30s. I remember when internet was dial up, you know, and someone picked up the phone and the internet went away and your computer was
a
box.
I remember when we didn't have internet, Charles.
Right. So, do you know, I just think we kind of, you know, the phones is a classic one, you know, like my first phone when I was 15 was a brick. And now you've got a smartphone. It's all of the information in the entire world in your pocket.
Well, my first job after university was to sell pagers. I think I've said this to you before. And to activate the pager, you had to go to a telephone box, ring a center, read the message that you wanted the person to type in, and they sent it to the person's pager.
Yeah, well, the first copywriting job I did, freelance, was, you know, it wasn't particularly well paid, you know, just starting out. But I got news last week ago, from, because I'm still in contact with the people there, that those entry-level positions no longer exist because artificial intelligence is doing that work now. And obviously, you know, you might think it's not that important, but it means that that level of copywriting, if there's no entry-level positions, it's the same with coding, right? If there's no entry-level positions for people to learn, you won't have any senior copywriters or senior engineers or senior whatever you might think, wow, well, AI will do everything. But ultimately, it won't. And you're going to have fewer and fewer people that know how anything works. And that'll eventually become a huge problem.
Indeed. On that extremely happy note, that all jobs will be gone and we'll be sitting on a beach, hopefully, with AI robots delivering our drinks. We shall leave you, and enjoy. Love to hear your comments about what you thought about the charting with the information alongside it. And we look forward to speaking to you all next week.
Bye bye.
Mum's the word.
This podcast was brought to you by Monday Upbeat Markets. If you would like to appear on a future episode of the Mum's Podcast, please email mondayupbeatmarkets@gmail.com.